Welcome to the CRA Podcast, a podcast committed to highlighting the great work across the nation in transforming communities through the power of economic development and the Community Reinvestment Act. Well, in today's episode, we have the opportunity to reflect upon digital inequity in place-based community revitalization. Today, I have the honor of interviewing Sarah Hope Marshall of Profound Hope Industries. Sarah is an accomplished speaker, an experienced executive, and she brings diversity and social impact experience to her consulting work, having spent almost two decades in various forms of community development work, which includes running a community development credit union, which also happened to be a CDFI. She has hands-on experience in community organizing and social enterprise, and also experience in data conversions and mergers and tech upgrades and lending and consumer finance and change management. She recently published an article in the Journal of Public and Nonprofit Affairs. The title of her article is Reckoning with Digital Inequity in Place-Based Community Revitalization. Within the article, which we will link to in the show notes, Sarah highlights the changes in digital equity as it relates to America's rich history of place-based community development. Place-based community development used to be defined in very specific terms around very specific geographic location. Now, well, with decades of modern technology, social networks and interconnectivity of communities has changed everything. This article sheds light on digital inequity in the current economy, how technology impacts urban communities, and how changes may affect social equity objectives within public administration and in our government. So what I'll do in this episode is focus our conversation around digital inequity and how community development professionals can revisit this as they formulate their community development programs going forward, as they consider new strategies and new partnerships with community-based organizations. It'll be important to reflect on this very important topic. Without further ado, now we'll move on to the episode. Welcome to the CRA Podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
I read your article, of course, that was published in the Journal of Public and Nonprofit Affairs. Congratulations. And my first question is, why did you focus on this article now?
That's a great question. The article really came from my own experiences leading the CDFI in 2017, 2018, was the CEO of a small CDFI credit union that was based in Uptown Chicago, which is a really unique neighborhood. It was a very unique credit union, one of the early CDFIs that was certified in 1994, and tons of experience launching innovative products. But we were in a really interesting neighborhood that was highly diverse, very low income. We were offering products and services that was really focused on helping people who were having trouble making ends meet. We did things like really focusing on payday alternative loans and citizenship loans and products designed for people who didn't traditionally have access. And gentrification's kind of been a thing all around the United States over the past 5 to 10 years or so. And that started happening in Uptown. But what happened in my specific work was there was a point in time where a 344-unit affordable senior building was put into receivership and then deconverted into luxury micro studios. Yeah. And these previous tenants had been members of the credit union coming in regularly. We knew that they were. They'd been part of the community for a very long time. And all of a sudden, and there was some change because of the gentrification, but all of a sudden when this new building opened, it's almost like we started getting an influx of young, white, upwardly mobile professionals coming to the credit union because they liked our progressive values and what we stood for, but they were an entirely new demographic. And it made me pause and just ask, wait a minute, this neighborhood that we're in has a really rich history of community organizing and groups working together. There's been books written about it. In my research, I'd done work on studying the first ever tenant buyout of a HUD affordable building that was turned into co-ops that happened in this neighborhood that I was working in. And so I started asking the question, you know, what happens when technology allows people to be more mobile, to be less attached to the community and place that they're in? And for example, all these 23, 24-year-olds were not going to be living in the community for decades. They had 400 square feet and a comfortable income. This was a transient location for these young adults. And so it really made me start to consider, how are neighborhoods changing and how is technology changing? Really some of the foundations of what has created CRA and the CDFI industry and all of the long history of people working in place to try to change specific locations when we now can communicate all over the world instantly. That has to do something for the dynamic we're working in. So I wanted to explore that question. And that's really where this research came from.
That's powerful. Thank you for sharing that story. And I'm sure there's many similar stories in so many different neighborhoods. It's interesting that you mentioned 1994. Well, that's when I started doing this work. And we had the old CRA rule regulation, right? And it was all about outreach. And so I remember starting my CRA journey, my bank, and I was a convener. And this place-based community development is what I did almost full-time. And it was powerful. Actually, I formed the richest, most special relationships of my life through that work. And fast forward 29 years and everything's different, right? Yes. So it's so timely that you publish this and shedding new light on how we connect as communities and individuals to continue our commitment to community revitalization. And especially now that we are post-pandemic in recovery, and it's even more prevalent and important. So thank you for doing so. This is very, very important work around community development. So what do organizations need to do to make sure that they're considering digital equity? Or can you talk more about that as continuing your conversation around the shift from place-based community development to how technology comes into play?
Yeah, of course. And you raised a really great point about community development historically being so place-based, and then a lot of great organizations still are working in specific locations. But if you think about the trajectory of where we are, CRA and the CDFI fund, the way that was initiated, really came about because of place-based community organizing. And now we've come to a place where technology has really expanded our social networks so that we're constantly communicating with people all over the country. You and I are in different states right now, and I imagine many of your listeners are constantly working with people nationally.
Yes.
And so at the same time, social networks are what are known and have been demonstrated to advance socioeconomic mobility, right? So CDFI practitioners are trying to advance socioeconomic mobility. So it's really important that we consider how technology might be changing our social networks and not just how people have access to technology. One of the things that has changed concretely is that community organizing efforts are much more expansive. But in conversations I've had with a number of community organizers, at the same time, you can get thousands of people following a hashtag or sharing on social media. But the day-to-day grounds, commitment, showing up for actions, that's sort of been lost, where it's harder to get people to show up to meetings when there's something happening in the community because we're pulled in so many different directions. So to sort of level set, in my mind, it's really important for organizations doing community development work to consider how they can recenter collaborative social capital-based approaches to advancing socioeconomic mobility while at the same time helping people advance digitally. Because if we don't have access to technology, we are definitely going to be left behind, and the people that we're trying to serve are going to be left behind. So in terms of some practical things for organizations to think about, I would, one, suggest really focusing on the experience of the end user in relation to technology. And I know community development organizations cover a really broad spectrum in terms of type of work that they do as well. Some are doing direct consumer financial literacy, and others are doing affordable housing development and may not have a lot of contact with their end user. But all of those designing questions or design components of programs or buildings or loan funds or policies. Really somehow people interact with those things, with technology in some way, or don't, but all of those design choices mean something. So it's important for organizations to really consider the end user. And then the other high level sort of consideration is really just thinking about digital equity as a spectrum, because historically, and even in current context, it's really talked about as access to broadband internet and computer hardware. And there's a lot of conversation about that because there's funding coming out for broadband and internet for all initiatives that are happening. And so it's easy to fall back into this place of just thinking of digital equity as accessing the internet and a computer, when at the moment that we're in, there are people that are developing artificial intelligence and all kinds of tools that we don't even understand their full capacity yet. So we've got people at very different ends of the spectrum as far as where technology is. And so digital equity needs to include things like learning to code and having access to ownership of companies that are creating decisions that change the landscape for people. And even things in the middle, like being able to brand online or create landing pages or market yourself in a virtual environment, things that are sort of that interim skill set between just typing and having.
Which is hard enough, I might say.
That is a whole job in itself. Yeah. So there's sort of all these understanding of skills that people have to have to really thrive socioeconomically that organizations that care about this type of work should be considering.
Absolutely. The digital divide will become greater, right? If we're not all supporting on skills building and access and understanding. So how does the tech sector impact socioeconomic mobility for underserved communities?
There's a lot of ways that tech impacts our world that I think we just don't stop to consider. I've had the opportunity to talk a bit about some of my research. And one of the stories that sticks out to me, I was actually speaking to an undergraduate class of students. So that
must have been fun.
You know, mid-career. So I grew up with a bit less access to technology. And one student in particular said, well, what did you do before GPSs and smartphones? And I had to pause and say, well, I mean, wait, my first phone wasn't a smartphone. All I could do was call. Like, I couldn't do anything but call. And over time, smartphones are a great example. We got features added to it that we already had the phone, so we didn't think about when we had texting. And then we didn't think much when we then had a calendar, to the point where we are now, where we all carry computers in our pocket all the time. A different dynamic, but we adopt things slowly. So we don't always pause to say, wait, how has my world changed because of technology?
Yeah, like when I started my career at the bank, right? We didn't have the internet, you know, in the bank. And we, you know, the newest thing was the AOL, and we can all hear that buzz. Well, some of us can hear that buzz in our head. Right. And yes, I had a flip phone.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, and my goodness.
How here we are, and we've forgotten to do conference calls because we're on Zoom all the time now.
Exactly. Exactly. And so getting back to the tech impact, so I often think of fintech in the CRE world, but how might we then consider, if we have those, you know, phones in our back pocket, how do we really focus on, again, the socioeconomic mobility for these underserved communities? Is it access? Is it access to the tech or the phone, or what is it?
That is a great question. And when I concluded my research, part of what I concluded was there needs to be a lot more work done in this space, because I've been excited to see things that have developed and researchers who are working on things like tech ethics and digital equity and the digital divide. But there's still just a lot that's unknown in terms of how technology is really impacting our socioeconomic mobility and the choices that we have. I think of really simple things like the way communities interact with each other now. And this one's really specific to people who work in place-based space as well. But think about just really simply Amazon Prime and what we did before Amazon Prime. We had interactions with people in our community because we had to go to the store. Maybe we ran into somebody that we saw at a community meeting that we would have preferred not to see, but we had the opportunity to interact with them and reinforce that people belong to the place. I assume my neighbors know me as the woman who walks the annoying chihuahua around the neighborhood. Like that's probably, you know, what I am in my community. But there is a concept around that, and it's called familiar strangers, people that we see regularly. And there have been some specific studies. For example, there was one that I came across in my research out of Boston where they identified that presence of additional Airbnbs actually increased crime in the community because people were not as connected to the community. You were introducing factors to community where people were established or part of the place in the same way that long-term residents would be. And it created some similar challenges to what we see in communities where people are moving frequently because of their socioeconomic status and needing to find an affordable place to live. So we're seeing these dynamics of higher income communities as well, sort of the deconstructing of place-based community. But specifically in terms of socioeconomic mobility, I think being thoughtful about what it means to be place-based and working to preserve that element is important because we can ultimately only really make an impact where we are, and helping people along that spectrum is something to consider. How do we help people establish those relationships that they need to advance socioeconomically while helping them upskill to the tools and skills they need to thrive in a digital environment?
Right. Well, I work with a lot of CRA and compliance professionals across the nation. And when you look at our community development leaders, what might be some maybe unintentional digital equity blind spots for those in the industry?
Well, first of all, we all have them, right? I mean, part of it is just the function of the way that we work. We know our jobs really well. We know our industry really well. We know our sector really well. And when we talk about technology, we're introducing an entirely different sector. And I should probably have prefaced, before I landed in the CDFI industry, I was actually working for a social enterprise around bridging the digital divide. So I had 6 or 7 years of history working on digital equity. So I was able to make that connection maybe more easily than somebody who never been part of the sector. But as with anything, it's important to be interdisciplinary in our approach and draw from skills and tools that other industries can bring in. Technology sector strikes me as one that is even more important to be aware of because of the ways that it can reshape our communities and reshape our relationships. And even in some of the ways that tech companies are starting to fund community development work, just really considering even holding some of those funders accountable. And this is outside of my research, but there's been lots of conversation about the impact of social media and polarization and conspiracy theories and misinformation online. So we need to be careful about allowing tech companies to introduce that to this sector too.
Things to be mindful of. Well, my blind spot was, until I reflected on your article and a couple of life experiences, is that I used to think that digital equity would be an easier path because everybody has the phone in their back pocket or in their purse. But the reality is that's just such a thin slice of what true digital equity could and should be. And so that was my blind spot. That was my aha moment, that I was working in community and, oh, let's just go put a computer into our local nonprofit or in our lowest income census tract and we'll go volunteer. But so that's a good first step. But then what? And then career counseling and advancement and all the other things, and how then technology plays into really a person's journey in their life, right? So I'm in an urban area and I have generally, knock on wood, good internet. And there's still some communities across the nation that are still trying to connect. Tell me a little bit more about your research around broadband.
Yeah, that's a great point. And smartphones are a big one that I think the banking industry, and I came from credit unions, the credit union industry too, to lean into a little bit. But to your point, when you think about that computer and a computer lab, imagine trying to share that one computer with 100 other people in the building when you're working on a deadline. I remember at my own credit union back in 2019, we would teach members how to get it into online banking. And a lot of them only had access to computers in a library, which requires some time and travel.
Yes.
And the number one use of libraries is to get online to access social services and to apply for jobs, which is,
right.
You know, that's a sort of an additional, there's research around the cost of being poor, but when you think about just the time it takes out of a person's day who's already struggling to have to go fill out a form online that you can't really do easily on a smartphone because it's 50 pages long.
Right.
You need that hardware.
Yeah.
And I think the pandemic exposed quite a bit of that too. That Pew Research released a study suggesting that 56% of students had trouble accessing computers and being able to study online. I'd actually spent some time in Upper Michigan towards the end of the pandemic and was able to have a conversation with the school teacher there. And she said, well, our students just didn't go to school for a year because we didn't have broadband. So they missed an entire year of school.
Wow, that breaks.
So there's still a lot of work to be done. And I know there's funding coming out specific to digital equity to try to correct some of these things, but it's a slow moving process. And that's why we need private organizations and private funders to be doing some of that interim work where they're close to the community and can understand the specific situations well. And that's where that place-based approach is really important.
I just had a thought. My mother lives in a rural area and I can't do work there. I love her, but I can't do work there because I can't run a Zoom meeting. And so I have to go into another town to go conduct my business. And my brother and I researched the satellite type of options now for rural areas. And in fact, when we researched it, although it was super expensive, like we're not going to do it for my mother, who's not going to be on it. And it was more expensive, but you could actually have faster, you know, than broadband because it's, you know, anyway, I won't do it justice explaining it, but it's all satellite based. And I was intrigued. So I just wonder if that, not just laying cable, but considering the new tech and what else is possible for these other areas.
Yeah. And it's moving fast. I mean, that's the real thing that does make it difficult to pay attention to, because by the time we figure out a solution, something's already been introduced. I know when I was doing this research, I was having trouble keeping up with all the things I've read about. And so technology, that's a whole nother conversation about tech.
It is.
A different one.
Yeah. We won't get that geeky today. I can do my research too. Oh my goodness. Well, so as you know, I serve a lot of CRA professionals, and tell me a little bit more of what you think they can do to advance digital equity from their vantage point.
Sure. And there's one initiative that crossed my path that I thought was really intriguing, not something that I specifically had a hand on, but I think is worth mentioning. There's an initiative by an organization called the National Collaborative for Digital Equity that has started a campaign called 1% for Digital Equity. And the call is to ask CRA officers to commit 1% of their CRA budget to digital equity initiatives because they're up a really powerful funding stream for organizations that are trying to do this work. But I think there's also a call and a place for CRA officers to encourage CDFIs to think about technology as well. CDFIs are amazing, but some of them are really small and scrappy. And so in all the things they're doing, they don't always have time to pause and consider how either they can be using tech to do their own work better. Maybe CRA fund officers can help fund technology for CDFIs so that they can improve their own capacity. I know there's some initiatives around that already, but just something to be conscious of. But then also just asking questions about how these organizations they're funding are incorporating digital equity questions into their small business trainings or their consumer financial literacy trainings or their housing developments.
Right.
And when we talk about financial literacy, that's a that opens a whole different direction because now there's digital financial literacy where people right. need to understand fintech and unregulated lenders and cryptocurrency and things that have a very direct economic impact on people's lives.
Absolutely. It used to be, let's work against payday lenders. Now we can add and this and this and this as well from the digital landscape, right? Ugh, so many options out there. So these CRA officers have so much on their plate, and oftentimes we create a strategic plan or a CRA plan to project and set goals for ourselves. And lately, of course, with the CRA reg that might be coming out soon, or we expect any time, of course, it weaves in climate change, right? And so there's a lot to, really consider as we're projecting and creating our path forward for our CRA program. And so maybe as we assess the community credit needs of our communities, we're adding in that digital equity lens as an intention, right? Along with climate change and some other factors that are very important as well. But to integrate that into the way that we run our CRA programs, or at least assess it in the current communities which they serve, whether urban or rural, and just to ask the question, I think elevates the conversation, and then they'll start coming up with new solutions, perhaps with some of their local partners. So wonderful. Well, that great advice, elements to consider for our CRA professionals. Anything else that you want to share regarding this article or otherwise as it relates to community development?
Yeah, just to conclude, I think the way that you described that was perfect. That digital equity really, it doesn't need to be a new project or program or strategic plan, but an overlay. Because when we think about the way technology really overlays everything we do and how we function as a society and in our roles, it's just a matter of pausing to ask those questions and encourage the people that we interact and work with to ask those hard questions so that we're achieving the goals that we set out to achieve with our investments and funding opportunities, and just say, hey, how is technology affecting this space, whether it's through program design or application design or technical assistance design, any one of those things? If you just start to ask some questions, I think both CRA officers and organizations will have new epiphanies about ways they can do things differently within their organization that doesn't require a ton of new resources.
Right. And volunteering to take the next step. There's many ways for our CRA officers to, of course, ask the good questions and continue the community revitalization work, right? And of course, considering digital equity is just as important. So thank you for all your work around this. And I love how you have a credit union background and CDFI, and you care so deeply about community development. Thank you so much for all that you do.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to share. It's been a pleasure.
Of course. Well, in the show notes, we will link to the article and some of the other initiatives that were shared here. And we look forward to hearing more from Sarah as she continues to address digital inequity in place-based community revitalization. Until next time, bye for now, everyone.
Well, that's a wrap. I hope you found this episode inspiring, and my sincere hope is that you find one simple concept or tip to take back to your work to elevate our collective commitment to our local communities. And if you are a banker responsible for a portion of the CRA program, or you are the CRA officer, you may want to consider joining the CRA Hub. You will join your colleagues in weekly activities to take a deeper dive into community development concepts and best practices. Check out cratoday.com/hub to learn more. Until the next CRA podcast episode, take care of you and yours. Bye for now.